Welcome to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Henn. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. In each episode, Mark breaks down key financial strategies and provides direct action steps so you can expand your financial toolkit and change the trajectory of your financial life. He also sits down with individuals who are actively using these wealth-building power plays, giving you real-world insights into how these strategies work in action. Are you ready? Let's jump in and start building your financial future today.
Welcome to the Transformational Wealth Podcast. I'm Mark Henn, CEO of Harvest Financial Advisors, and I am thrilled today to have Aaron Satzker joining us on this podcast. Aaron is president and CEO of the Northern Cincinnati Foundation and really has been recognized as a leader here in Cincinnati. She was even named as a honoree for the Cincinnati Business Courier 40 Under 40, which is a tremendous honor. So congrats. I don't even think I knew that about you. So congrats on that. And she has a very influential podcast, the What Gives podcast. I love the catchy name, that inspires philanthropy among top business leaders and has spent a lot of time developing strategic partnerships within the community that drive meaningful impact in the Cincinnati region. So Aaron, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and think a lot about what you do. And this, I can say you do have a podcasting voice. So looking forward to chatting with you today.
A face for radio, maybe they would say.
So that's right.
So, well, and I know I had the joy of being on the What Gives podcast a while ago, and so I wanted to return the favor, especially when it came to this area. So this, as I've mentioned in my other podcast, this season of podcasts revolves around my new book, Power Plays of the Wealthy. And so in other podcasts, we've talked about some of the other super asset classes and strategies that go along with the wealthy, what they use, how they structure those super asset classes. Within the book, we also talk about how they layer them together, which is a more complex structure, but very helpful in understanding how to reduce taxes and gain wealth. But one of the areas that I mentioned throughout the book that I think is very important is the idea of giving back. I would say that it's not a requirement to give back. I'm sure there are people that are very wealthy that don't have a philanthropic bias towards them in terms of what they want to do, but most do. And what I found is, and I'm curious if you agree with this, what I found is that those that actually have a heart or actually have a purposeful structure to give back to the community not only have greater joy in their life, they actually grow their financial wealth faster than those that actually don't give. And that sounds counterintuitive. I'm curious, have you experienced that? Have you seen that as well?
Absolutely. That's definitely something that we as philanthropic leaders discuss in philanthropy. And, you know, it's something that we talk about is that when you're dealing with people that are giving back, you're actually what you're giving, you're receiving more in return. Your business is growing. Yes, assets are growing. And so it really truly does behoove you to give back to the broader community and it comes back to you. There's actually data that supports that. And I know it sounds odd maybe to people that are not giving currently at a higher level, but really when they step into that top tier donor level, we see it come right back and even help their business grow. I always try to, you know, that's not the reason you give, but definitely from any entrepreneur I've met with, they've said, you know, Aaron, I started giving, you know, $25,000 a year from the business, but now I have, you know, a donor advised fund and we're giving $1 million a year away and my business is growing. And I think they kind of see that like approach, right? Where mm-hmm. you're like, wow, I'm shocked that it's coming back tenfold from those original gifts. Right. And so I hear that all the time from CEOs, all different age levels, about giving back to the broader region nationally and how it impacts them. And that's not how they started out giving. I think a lot of people are from humble beginnings, humble means, and then they want to give somebody an opportunity that they never had. And they're truly inspired to lend a helping hand and give back. So to your statement, absolutely. And I hear that every week when I meet with leaders in the region.
I think it's really about, we'll get into this a little bit here, but where you focus, what is wealth to you and where is that focus, right? And if the focus is on financial assets only as wealth, it winds up being a long haul for people. Whereas those that recognize that financial assets are just kind of the foundation or a springboard for all these other forms of wealth, that that those are the ones that have a more prosperous life in all areas of their life. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But what I'd love to do is kind of just come back to you, and we'd love just to hear a little bit about your background and kind of what got you to this point versus what, you know, kind of what you've done in your career so far, what led you to the Northern Cincinnati Foundation, just kind of where you're how that passion was formed and where it comes from. So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit, love to hear that.
Definitely. I'm absolutely happy to share. I can say that philanthropy is in my blood and I was raised to give back. My mother actually has always been a very active volunteer, philanthropist, and we always went along with mom. So there was like a local fire here in the 90s. I believe it was 1999, actually, locally. And I can remember hopping in the car. It was Christmas Eve with my mother, and these families had lost everything in a fire. And she said, we're going to help these families. Get in the car, kids, you know. And I remember just the community responding and bringing toys for people that had lost everything the day before Christmas. And even as a child, gosh, I mean, I was young, you know, and it really did bring tears to my eyes. You know, I was under 10 years old at that time. And I could just remember like this whole warehouse was filled with toys, and we had responded to this crisis for these people. And the community definitely met that head on. And I think that is probably one of my most pivotal memories of being involved at that level to help and give back. And I just remember like seeing people in lines off the interstate to drop off carfuls of toys for these kids. And so I think definitely my family, it was part of my upbringing to be a volunteer, give back through my church, give back through school, give back just in different community aspects. And so I truly was raised to give back. And I always wanted to be a good community steward. I'm very passionate about being involved. And I actually went to Washington, D.C. out of college, worked for Speaker John Boehner in public service, really enjoyed that. Came back home to Westchester, Ohio, north of Cincinnati. And that's where I really got the charitable bug. I had the founders of the foundation approach me to take over. It was a total pivot from politics, but really not. They're actually pretty similar when you're talking about impacts. And I jumped right in and I learned so much. So glad that I did, because for me, this is a very fulfilling career path. And I love helping people be inspired to give back and to kind of grow, maybe if they didn't grow up giving back, to kind of get them started in giving back.
And while we're super grateful to have you back and that you escaped the DC, analogy you want to compare
swamp,
to that.
You know, it was built on a swamp, so we can call the swamp.
That's right. Well, so what led you to leave DC? Was it Speaker Boehner leaving Congress? Was it something else?
No. I came back home. Yes. So I came back home to get married, and I still work for John. Okay. I loved DC. And so I think it was hard to leave because I just loved all the action. But, you know, came back, was getting married, different quality of life in Ohio. When I was in DC, I was literally working 3 to 4 days a week, 18 to 19 hours a day, because I would go straight from the Hill to bartending and waitressing in downtown Chinatown, because you don't make a lot as a staff member. And so just trying to make ends meet was tough. Because those salaries begin in the 20s, which is crazy.
Right.
And so I had to hustle and bustle after work to try and earn tips and pay my way. And so that was a good lesson, but coming home and working one job was very nice.
So what did you see where, obviously it's the opportunity to work in DC, it's the connections that are there as well. Have you seen that since you've been back here? Those connections allow you to kind of continue to build and grow and expand the reach of the Northern Cincinnati Foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. I still keep in contact with many of my DC connections. You know, I interned in DC the summer before I took the job at DC. And a lot of those, we call it Team Boehner people, have moved on to various careers. And it's been helpful. You know, I have one person that I worked with at Facebook. And so if anything ever comes up that I need help with, he immediately can help me on that. And, you know, I helped someone's business account get unlocked. I was like, hey, this was a mistake. Do you think you can? And boom, within 10 seconds, it was fixed. So yes, can we, you know, still use some of those connections? Absolutely. It's been very helpful. And I do feel like, you know, working for John, it was this family. And the family has grown. Everyone's kind of moved beyond. I know a couple others that are in philanthropy now. I think they are similar to working in politics, because you are bringing people along. You know, you've got a board that you're working with, or a community that you're working with for change and impact.
Right.
And the founders actually said to me, Aaron, why would you want to keep working in politics? If you work and you run a community foundation, you can do even better things with private dollars in your community immediately. Mm. And that really resonated with me. And that's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
So share with us a little bit about a community foundation, how it gives back to the community, but also the people that come to you, you know, they get something out of that as well. And so just talk about the structure of that. And when I give back, I know I can just make a donation to a church or a philanthropic organization, or some people may have heard the terms of 501c3 organization, tax exempt organization. How does a community foundation work?
Yeah, so really there are over 800 community foundations in the US and growing. And really what we are is this community trust fund. And it originated actually out of Cleveland, so go Ohio. And, you know, it was born in the early 1900s by an attorney who was also a financial advisor. And so since then, you know, here we are over 800 community foundations later, over 100 years later. And this concept is, right, you have families, like when you are listening to maybe radio shows or public TV shows, you see supported by such and such fund, right? And they are usually held at a community foundation. And the way it works is they get to be connected. So if it's you, Mark, that we have the Hen Family Fund, you get to give to your church and to any of your favorite causes through your donor advised fund is what we call it, which is a great charitable vehicle that benefits many, especially by giving appreciated assets. But the fee that we take through that as a community foundation, we assess the needs through needs assessments and local impacts, and we give back. And so it's this whole community trust fund premise. We cover 3 counties. However, we actually have donors from everywhere. They don't have to live, work, or play in the identified region. They can just maybe work with you and your team, but still be helping a lot of great causes at the same time. And we're always happy to help and vet out causes as well for
right.
for clients, for donors. I mean, that's why we're here.
Hmm. So I'm going to back up just to add some context around that. And you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, or correct me. But again, as an individual, I could say I'm going to choose a church just as an example. I could make a donation to a church as a lot of people do every week or monthly basis, whatever, and be done with that. And know then that I potentially get to write that off of my taxes later on. Again, the tax write-off should not be the main focus, but recognizing there is potentially that benefit there as well.
Absolutely.
And you alluded to something. I'm going to have you speak a little bit more about this. There's other ways to give that actually have even bigger tax benefits. And then we'll come back around to the like donor advice on a foundation. But what are some of those other ways just individuals can give that have some bigger tax benefits? You mentioned appreciated securities. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So a lot of people locally, right, maybe hold on to or hold PNG stock. This is a very common one. And if this stock appreciates, you can donate the stock to your donor advised fund, which is a benefit. Maybe you can talk about why that's a benefit, but you're able to give more and you receive the tax deduction immediately through that gift. And it's just a more sophisticated way to give. We always say non-cash assets, right? That's how you're winning. Whether it's S Corp stock and you're selling your business, whether it's real estate, we're talking about non-cash assets. And I think so many times people will cut a check to their church or drop off cash, you know, and they think that this is strategic. It's not. I'm here to tell you it's not. Anytime I get like some large donation from a donor that sold a business and they're giving me $1 million in cash, I'm thinking, oh, but if you just would have called me before LOI was in hand, things would be different. You could have given so much more. You could have maximized your gift. Mm-hmm. And I think I love that they're giving, but I wish people knew how much more that could be amplified if they took a different route. So I do sometimes, if I know them well, call them up and say, hey, I hear that you're dropping me a check for $500K, but any chance you've appreciated securities or, you know, any stock gifts, why don't you talk to your CPA? And they call me back and they go, oh my goodness, I did not realize I could be doing this yearly. And I go, well, I did, but I, you know, you don't always want to call them out on that, right?
Sure.
So they learn a lot through that process, and we transition people from being a cash giver to donating stock because it just sometimes makes more sense.
And so I agree with you. I mean, we might have people call up and say, hey, I'm gonna give this to my church, whatever, cash, and they have these highly appreciated securities. And so we might say, well, why don't you donate the highly appreciated security, and then we'll take your cash and just repurchase the investment. And have all those capital gains, just leave your account. So again, there's three people in the transaction, right? There's for us, it's the client, the charity, and the federal government. And in that transaction, who gets cut out? The federal government. And so I think it's everybody's responsibility to pay the least amount of tax as possible. So how do you maximize those tax strategies?
Completely agree on that. Yes.
Yeah.
Completely agree on that.
So here's somebody, you know, that is in a situation where they're giving maybe $3,000 or $4,000 a year to the church. That can still be a strategy, but probably not they're probably not at a point yet where they might use a donor advised fund. But somebody that might have significant wealth, and you use some larger dollar figures there, let's say $500,000, it could be $250,000, something like that, that has these appreciated securities, that wants to donate, but is uncertain about where they want to donate, or maybe want to do it over a period of years. But for some reason today, it makes the most sense to make a larger contribution so they can get a large write-off this year. So, you know, if somebody has like higher income this year versus future years, and maybe a time to do that, but they don't necessarily want to, they don't necessarily want to give it all away this year. They can go to a donor advised fund and put that money in there, get the full write-off. But then I hear you saying then they can use that over the next several years to give it away if they want to. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why it's a great strategy. So many times I tell this story, and I think I've told you this story, but it does make me laugh really hard. We work with a lot of first generation philanthropists, which are my favorite people that literally started their business in their garage, in their car, in their apartment, in their house. I've heard every story, right? Right. The shed out back. I mean, I've heard these same common themes about how tough it was to start a business and how they started, and now they're global.
Right.
And so it's so funny. I had this gentleman that sold a business and needed to be philanthropic for tax purposes. And he came into the office, first time I had ever met with him, handed me a check and said, "Give me a form for a fund agreement. My CPA says I need to be here, but don't get any pretty ideas about me. I'm not some great person." And I laughed so hard. That person was very authentically them. And right. Now I can say that this person and their spouse give regularly, add to their fund regularly, because it felt like a challenge. You know, right. Okay, I hear you. You never had the opportunity to give back, but we are going to help connect you. Feel the dopamine of giving back and meet some of these causes, and you're going to love it. And I can say that he honestly does, but that's probably one of my favorite. If I write a book like you, Mark, that's probably one of my favorite giving stories is that he was very direct, very honest with me. And I don't think I've ever laughed so hard because it was like, okay, well, we will take this donation, but we are going to put it to good use. And he's still adding to it, letting it grow. You don't have to spend it all immediately. And a lot of times people like to do a legacy gift, which means, you know, either through your estate plan or actually, like, if you're doing it now, you're endowing something, meaning it's long-term invested into the future. And then your kids manage it, your grandkids manage it, and it's multi-generational. And I'm really passionate about that kind of giving because you're teaching your kids and your grandkids, and you have this legacy on philanthropy you're starting.
I completely agree. I mean, that's such a powerful impact for them to see that and actually to get involved. And I think it's important for the next generations to see if a family does have wealth, it's important for that child to see that that wealth can be used for good in the community, in the world, and start instilling that early, just like you had the experience, right? At 10, you went to see the, you saw those toys. I mean, it made an impact on you. It started shaping and forming.
Remember.
I think helping out,
giving back. Yeah. I mean, I even went to a nursing home with my mom. I mean, I have all these memories of her volunteering, which was, I think it was called Mother Teresa. It's been so long. But I remember going there with her and visiting the elderly and the aging, and that meant a lot too. So I have a lot of different memories from whatever she took me to as a child, the three of us, because she stayed home and, she just volunteered a lot. That's how she kept busy.
Well, somebody comes along and then donates this stock. Some of the nice things are, and then it could be sold with no tax consequences.
That's right.
You all will have the money if it's not all given away in that year one, which typically you wouldn't do that. Otherwise, you wouldn't set up the donor advised fund.
You wouldn't.
The money can be invested then, so it can grow, and that so potentially that person making the donation would have more to give away in the future because of that growth as well in their philanthropic endeavors. And then you all take care of all of the issues behind the scenes. So someone comes along and says, "I want to give to these 10 places. I don't know how to do it," whatever. You all will do all the legwork for that. Or if, as you mentioned earlier, somebody comes along and says, "I would like to be able to support, you know, is there some way I can support, you know, deep sea underwater research, something like that," and they have no idea how to do that, you all actually will go out and look for some of those organizations where they could donate to and provide help that way too, correct?
That's right. No, I have donors that want to give. Think about this. Like, sometimes they don't have a connection at all to our local community and they want to give in way different areas. You know, I've had Florida causes, Louisiana causes, Tennessee causes, really We've run the gamut nationally on looking into these nonprofits. And sometimes I even go as far, I had one that really wanted like bylaws, and they wanted to be connected to like, what's their most recent financials? Have they had an audit? So some of these donors get really into it, right? Like on vetting, because if they're going to give a substantial amount of money to an organization, I've had some serious due diligence on behalf of large grant making. And so we pull all of that. And so I've vetted almost like names of board members back when things weren't 100% online and records weren't 100% online. So calling these nonprofits and pulling together memos for donors. And that's really, that's why you use us. And then a lot of people do prefer anonymity. If you have your own private foundation and you have a bunch of employees and they can see that you have $10 million in a private foundation, but you just did cuts, you know, well, now maybe you're getting lit up online. And so the anonymity portion to a lot of people is nice too. They can't see what is your specific fund hold like a private foundation. And then also there's a 5% spending rule from private foundations where there's not that rule, with the donor advice fund.
Okay. All right. So that gives them a lot, obviously there's structure around this, but gives them a lot more flexibility and assistance, when they're again looking for that help where they want to look at. And of course, I'm sure you have a lot where they want to give to places around here. And then one of the benefits then is ultimately the foundation, the Northern Cincinnati Foundation, then actually gets to give back to the community through the through what's paid to them to kind of structure all this for everybody. You get to give back to the community. And I want to talk about that a little bit, but I'm going to take a quick aside here to say that this episode of Power Plays of the Wealthy is sponsored by Harvest Financial Advisors, a team of seasoned professionals committed to helping clients grow, protect, and enjoy their wealth. Whether you're building wealth, planning for retirement, or looking for smart investment strategies, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Visit harvestadvisors.com to learn more. And now let's dive back into the conversation with Aaron. So tell me a little bit about how then you can give back, how the foundation then gives back to the community around you.
Yeah. So we have grants that we actually, and we have scholarships as well, but grants. And so that's always kind of, I would say, flexed and changed as we've grown strategically. Currently, we have found that we are here to actually help C3 organizations, nonprofits, specifically social service nonprofits, be here for good. And that's our tagline, here for good. And not meaning just impact, but in perpetuity. So it's a dual meaning, here for good. And so currently we're focused on educating boards on, you know, building their operating endowment so that they're there strategically in perpetuity. To actually, they get my time now. I'm giving my time to two nonprofits to help for 4 years, bring them along, fully build and make them sustainable and kind of the legs to stand on. Because so many times these nonprofits are living in the day-to-day annual on their mission, which is amazing, but they haven't had that long-term sophisticated vision on endowment building. And like, you think about some of the largest endowments that you can think of in the U.S. I mean, many come top of mind. Notre Dame is one. In Cincinnati, St. X High School is another one. So large endowments that make sure that they're going to be there fulfilling their mission forever. And, you know, we were able to do that for ourselves. And because we were able to do that grassroots, bootstrap style, we want to do that too and help other nonprofits be fulfilled and sustainable. So that's our focus now. It hasn't always been, but we feel like that's our biggest impact, is to teach others how to fish.
So, you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you is just, you know, what's the importance of giving back to the community that you'd like to make sure others observe or realize? And that probably goes along with that tagline, here for good. So you recognize that, you recognize that something needs to be done, and you get to do this all day long, every day, out there promoting this, seeing this, seeing the community be built. I'm sure you see some things not work out that you wish would as well, because it's again, as you said, it's building and growing. But for others to realize that, hey, the foundation is here for good. You know, people can be here for good. We want to try to partner together to bring that to as many places as we can, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I do think we all have a duty as humans, as people, to be involved, to give back in whatever way that inspires you. I mean, the neat thing about what I do is I've literally been exposed to so many 501c3 organizations, and I get to meet people in their different passions. And I mean, really, it's all over the map. I mean, whether it's aging or disabilities or autism or parks, walkability, bikeability, I mean, I've seen it all, cats, dogs. So we really see everything, and even just, you know, Christian causes, you know, Jewish causes, we span the spectrum on giving. And I kind of love learning about all these really cool impacts. And I have my, you know, personal pet things that, that I have in my estate plan that'll go back to a donor advised fund here when I pass away to be managed by the foundation in perpetuity with my kids. But everyone's different. For example, my husband likes a like caddy scholarship nonprofit because he loves golf. Like so many nonprofits out there. But he thinks that one is the coolest thing in the world. And for me, I like women's causes and sports causes and things like that. So nothing's wrong. I just think get involved and help out and give back because it fills your cup to be doing good for others.
Right.
And I think we all become better people and we feel better and we're happier when we're doing something to serve others.
Yeah, definitely. What, and you mentioned something earlier about an endowment fund, and I want to come back to that as well, because an endowment fund is one of the options through the Northern Cincinnati Foundation as well. So the donor advised fund, as I understand, as you described it, is I can donate these assets and then I can give them out however I want to. And actually, I could give them all away if I wanted to and have it be gone. But an endowment fund is a little bit different animal. Explain a little bit about that in terms of compare or contrast. Yeah.
So endowments, I say, are what community foundations are experts in, right? We're dealing with that long legacy, the things that Schwab Charitable and Fidelity and all the others really can't do long-term multi-generational. And so let's say, because it's an easy number for somebody, let's say you have $1 million that you throw into a family fund, the hen family fund for $1 million.
Mine goes to the local grocery store right now, I think. It's
Of course it does. So does mine. But let's we're using you as an example because it's easy and it sounds nice. I like the hen family fund feel. So it's $1 million. You have a 4% spendable rate. And so that's $40,000 a year in perpetuity. Let's say you're giving to your church as $10,000. And then three other of your favorite causes in the family. So you have four causes, $10,000 a piece. And let's say those are like, you want to lock those in long term. It can always change, but you want to lock those in long term. Think about, you're going to be giving more at a 4% spend rate because that's going to grow to those causes. Right. And you're going to give more than $1 million to those causes. Like you're talking about long term sophisticated giving. And obviously compound growth, this is your whole line of work. And so to me, I just feel like that is such a great way to give back and to be in the long-term thinking versus that really short-term thinking. Not saying short-term is bad, right? Everyone needs a capital campaign. I get it. You know, you can have cash go to those types of things, right? Us Catholics are very guilty of that, right? We're like, okay, this priest needs XYZ and this built. And so we have a capital campaign for the local parish. I get it. All great things. But the long-term sustainability is really such a positive thing and very freeing for
right.
nonprofits. And so I preach endowment all day long because I think that's really just a great way to give back. And I wish every financial advisor understood it. You, Mark, understand so much. I don't always find that they're all as informed as you are. So definitely kudos on that front.
Yeah, thanks. You know, for us non-denominational churchgoers as well, they look for money as well. And so we want
to need capital campaigns too.
They have capital campaigns too. And we definitely want to give back and support to give to the community as well.
Absolutely.
And so the endowment is a situation where those are those things that go into perpetuity. And I would think, yes, I could give more today to this organization, but do those organizations appreciate more knowing that it's going to be a more consistent amount each year? Is that something they appreciate more so?
Yeah, I think this is my comment on that. Yeah. It depends on, and maybe this is horrible verbiage, but the sophistication of the individual person on that board, on that leadership team, because I will tell you, the more sophisticated person gives to endowment. They're like, I'm giving all my money to endow XYZ. They preach right. endowment and they get it. The unsophisticated giver, I would say, they typically don't get it, and that scares
right.
them. The long-term I'm not here, it depends on level of control, right? I say you do both. I give now, and then I have a larger gift through my estate plan set up,
right.
and that's going to be an endowment for my kids to manage. But right now, I'm giving what I can, as a family.
Right.
Capital quick. You know, non-cash asset type gifts, but it's quick. It's in and out,
right.
and it's not long-term now.
I think what I've seen is, going back to some comments you made earlier, a lot of these people didn't start out with a lot of wealth. And again, I know we can always point out.
So true.
If somebody didn't start out with wealth, we can always find somebody who had even less wealth. And so we recognize,
right.
you know, one of my passions is I'd love everybody to have that same starting point where if they have the passion and the drive and the commitment that they have the opportunity and platform to put that into place to build a business or build a career that's going to be exceptional, and they get to excel in that. That's one thing I love to see. And if I could bring that about for everybody, I want to do that. But for those individuals, I think most of them start out with not a lot in financial wealth. They are introduced to giving currently. And so the idea of an endowment is just different, right? And so
it's
when you
different.
Have that,
you're exactly
different,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right. So actually, most of my donors that endow larger funds, I can tell you that it was something that I planted the seed with 7 to 10 years ago. And it's so funny. And they're like, they were especially younger donors, I find. I have a younger female donor, built a business, started it out of her apartment. I love her story. And she started it with her husband, but he then spun off a new company because they decided they needed to stay married. You know how that is if you're both running the business together.
Right.
I'm sure there's lots of headbutting.
Yes.
But I planted the seed as soon as I met them on this is what you need to do. And it just took them so long to get there. And I can say that finally, after 6, 7, I don't know how long it was, years, they have an endowed fund and a non-endowed donor advised fund. And it's like, you're right. It just took us so long to get here. And they're mid 40s. But I find that a lot, no matter what age you are, they're like, okay. And even some of my donors that do endow, I explain it very well, I assure you. And they're like, wait a minute. So I can only spend the 4%. I'm like, yes, we went over this ad nauseum. But still, at first blush, I think it's just overwhelming. One, especially like, if you're selling a business, you're overwhelmed anyway through M&A activity.
Right.
That's
right.
Just an overwhelming process. But it takes a while to be married to the idea of what is endowment and what does that actually mean for me and my gifting? So I say it's a win, but it just takes people sometimes, it's not immediate for them to get there.
So you bring up an interesting point. If I have a business that's private and I have private stock, can I donate that to the foundation before it's sold?
Yes, but you have to do it before you have the letter of intent in hand. Mm-hmm. So many people maybe are already in the process and they've been trying to, you know, get a buyer and they're deep into the weeds or they were approached and LOI is already in hand. Now we can't do that. But if they know early on in the process, absolutely, S-Corp stock gifts are the way to go. It's just, you can give so much more. You're not paying as much, you know, capital gains. And so strategically, your M&A broker and your attorney hopefully would encourage you along with the CPA to, you know, donate S-Corp stock. And so this is something we're newer in. We've been doing for about five or 6 years. We actually utilize a third party. Some foundations have their own LLC so that that's protected right from anything litigious because we're talking privately held stock. And so there's a lot that goes into that, but we do it via third party to incept a donor advised fund.
And I think, you know, I kind of lobbed you that softball a little bit because I wanted to bring up a point. One, that it's, you know, we can think about other creative assets potentially to use, but two, and this is true amongst all, you know, through the book, I talk about all these different five super asset classes. There is a lot of timing issues that you have to be aware of to carry out these beneficial tax and wealth building strategies. And I just want to emphasize that it's important. I think some people are kind of like, I'm going to just do this. And then when I'm done, I'm going to find some people to help me out. And the problem is when you do that, you may have just blown up many different strategies that you could use, whether it's the giving strategy you're just talking about, whether it's a 1031 like-kind exchange in real estate, whether it's making sure if you invest into oil and gas to get the tax write-offs, make sure you do that correctly and properly and reported properly. So there, I only point that out to say it behooves people as their wealth builds to make sure they have people they can go to talk to before they make those decisions, because there could be a lot of dollars riding on that decision they make before or after whatever they're going to do.
So, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes too, I hear horror stories about maybe they gifted and then something happened along the way where they didn't do it in the right order and the IRS says, no. And those are rare stories, but those are really bad stories to hear for a donor, especially when we believe so much in that first generation philanthropy and doing good. That hurts. Right. So you do hear those bad scenarios from consultants and you're like, ooh. So don't be a bad example. You know, use your full team. Use Mark, use the CPA, bring on the full team. Use somebody like me. You need a team together in those situations.
You do. You need, again, I mentioned this in another book, in another podcast, Dan Sullivan, a strategic coach, wrote this great book called Who Not How. And it is about, you need who's in your life to be able to walk these things out, as opposed, you can only get so far with how can I do this? How can I do it on my own? There's only so far you can go with that. You need those who's in your life to be able to bring the most, the best, even more complex strategies. Hopefully, as I tell clients, we want to complicate your life, but we're going to take care of all the complications for you. And the reason we're doing that is because of the benefit that you're going to be bringing in. Yes, is it easy for me just to donate stock and I'm done? Yes, that's easy. But using a donor advised fund, using an endowment fund coming through the Northern Cincinnati Foundation, it increases the complexity, but the benefit that is there can be profound And you use the words rare and bad. You're right. It is rare, but the word I want to emphasize in that is bad. Because when it's bad, it's really bad.
It's really bad. I've heard some really terrible, I've sat through continuing education saying, oh, that poor person donated so much, right, and now they had to pay so much tax because it didn't count. Or, I mean, just wild scenarios that just make you go, oh.
Well, so because
the whole third party team is a great way, one, to insulate and indemnify yourself, hopefully, right?
Right.
But I mean,
stock that has short term capital gains or long term capital gains, completely different structure when you gift it. I remember reading a story about somebody, I think they were maybe on day 340 and they donated short term capital gains stock. Well, guess what? It's not going to go near as well for you if it was long-term capital gains. So all those little rules, having to know that, and I've never seen a scenario where it came out just slightly bad. They were all really bad. So
they were all really bad. Yes, I've taken classes about bad, and you're like, no, that poor person. I'm so sorry, you're that person.
I know.
So no, you want it to do good, but you also obviously want them to have the tax advantage, right? You want them to win as part of their team. I know I sure do, and I'm quick to say, talk to your CPA. Talk to, you know, Mark Henn with Harvest Financial Advisors. I'm not your financial advisor, you know, talk to him about what you're donating versus me. I can just tell you non-cash assets are best.
Yes.
But if you want that expanded upon, talk to your full team. So I think it's good to always ask the experts, right?
Yeah. How can somebody, so we've been talking about a lot around people that have built wealth, that have that significant wealth. What if I'm somebody in the community that is just starting that wealth building journey, but I do have a heart to want to give back to my community or to organizations? How can someone start giving back while they're going through that journey? It may not be, not be donating to the foundation right now, but what can they do to give back?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question, by the way. And honestly, that's why people do give, just so you know, to a community foundation, because you can actually open a fund for $5,000.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, it's like, what tax benefit are you really getting with the current tax code, right? At that level, but you're starting to build your family fund. And I think a lot of other ways too, people give back, are on the things that inspire you now directly. And so you kind of see that when people are in their 30s, younger 40s, really before, because you're paying for these children. Did you know they're expensive? I think you know they're expensive.
That's right, yes.
I'm like calculating braces and, you know, all the things that you calculate as, oh, travel sports maybe. Oh, that's crazy. All the compound growth you're missing out on by having children.
By the way, talking about compounding, those expenses tend to compound every year as well. You know, it goes from, it was $10 and now it's $50 and more. So yes.
Yes.
Please continue.
You can relate. You can relate here. You've lived it. I'm now starting the sports trajectory here. And
I gotta tell you, I'm still living it. They're adults, but you still live it. That's right.
That's what my sister said. She's ahead of me and she goes, it only gets worse. It's like boiling a frog on your time. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for the advice.
I want to come back to something you mentioned. You know, they obviously people can volunteer time. They don't have to have wealth to do
that,
things like that. But coming back, we've been talking about these foundations, these donor advised funds, things like that. That with people that are donating $250,000, $500,000. But I heard you say something. I want to come back just to point that out again. What I heard you saying is you could start one of those donor advice funds for as little as $5,000.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. And actually, you can even give to, we have some field of interest funds, and you could give $100 to a field of interest fund or.
Oh, wow.
And so you could give lower amounts and be a part of your local community foundation. And we even have something called giving circles. One is like a youth and philanthropy giving circle where these kids locally, whether they're in private school, homeschooled, public schools, they apply to be in youth and philanthropy and they actually raise money. And then they vote on the best impacts and give back. So like local giving circles, you know, let's say it's usually $100 to join and you're learning so much about vetting nonprofits and being inspired. And really everything's about sales, right? So these nonprofits come in, they present, they talk about their impacts, and then the kids get to decide, you know, who do they want to give to? And so there's so many different entry level points to philanthropy, and giving circles are one of those through community foundations.
I'm so glad you brought that up because because again, a lot of the conversation could be around, well, I can't do anything with the community foundation because I don't have enough, you know, they're talking about bigger numbers, but the fact that if there's these fields of interest for just $100, things like that, you can even be, what excites me about that, hearing that with you all, is that it may even introduce people to areas they don't even know are there. Like, oh, wow, that is interesting. I never thought about that. I would like to get involved in that. And so they can do that. So I really appreciate you bringing that up.
Right. No, and there are so many different ways. And we have scholarship funds that people do. A lot of people are into giving to scholarship funds. And we actually just opened up a scholarship fund that is giving to Catholic high schools locally in Cincinnati, because this anonymous donor just loved their experience in a Catholic high school and wants that same, I guess, grit level in some way to inspire the next generation. So he's kind of giving that opportunity to others. And so I love stories like that. And I think in my line of work, and in this community, I get to hear those gritty stories about people working so hard to build something, which is not easy, and then doing good. And they love doing good. And so those are my favorite people to hang out with and learn from. Hear their stories about their like various businesses. And I just hung out with someone doing copper wire the other day, manufacturing, that now has a $600 million valuation, almost $1 billion valuation, you know? And so, and that's their goal. And they started with just like $50,000, their business, you know? And so, and now they're the fourth biggest copper wire factory. Like, crazy stories. I love to hear how they did it.
You know, when I think about, as we were kind of getting to the end here, but just in general, I think there was a period of time in our society where, and this goes back, I think, to the boomers, where there was this idea that the government would be there to kind of take care of us. And, you know, as we see that's probably not so true. I've seen a lot of boomers come out, you know, in the past when they might be 50 years old, and are like, you know what, Social Security, this is all it's going to pay, or this isn't enough for me. I got to start saving. There was just this, the government's going to take care of us.
Wow.
And I think there's also been this focus of the government takes care of the community as well. And the streets. And I see that turning back again. And I think it's more probably with the Gen X generation seeing this, that they recognize that the government's not going to be there. I mean, look at how they deal with their finances, right? The government's not going to be there. So not only personally do I need to really take charge of my finances, my wealth building, which is another reason I wrote this book, but also when it comes to the community, I recognize, and I think a lot more people are, we need to give back to continue to build a community, because the government is not going to do it. We kind of need to do it ourselves. And I see this kind of turning and starting to build.
Amen, by the way.
Why you see these foundations starting and building and growing. Did you say there was 800 across the country? I see these building and growing because of that trend. I like to see that trend. And I'm very thankful that you all are there, because I think you do a fabulous, phenomenal job.
Thank you.
Getting that message out and carrying forth your mission to be here for good. So
thank you.
I'll take your amen is that yes, you agree that that's kind of, we see that kind of going on there.
Yeah, we do. Well. And I love that we are 100% private, right? I love we are all like local people. Back when there was nothing out here, right? But tumbleweeds and wide open spaces. And now we're kind of built out regionally, suburbia.
Right.
And I just think about the people that started this. Right. And it was small, local, grassroots gifts. Can you give and incept a community foundation? And my mom was a part of that kitchen table group that wrote the article of incorporation and thought this was a need regionally. So it's so fun to think about. They gave $5,000 to $25,000. And look where we are. And so I love citizens coming together, incepting something within their region and building it together with private dollars. I mean, you're not tied to anything then. And it's you have a blank canvas. So I'm very fond of private giving.
Nice. Well, I ask this question of everybody at the end, typically. And since this is the Transformational Wealth podcast, what does that term transformational wealth mean to you?
Yeah, I think, by the way, that's a great question. I mean, for me, I think of it in a couple ways. Philanthropy is the biggest way because that's my whole life and what I do and what I really am passionate about. So I think transformationally, in a positive way, impacting others. And I see it a lot with the people I work with and opportunities they never had. And so I think of it that way, but I also think about it maybe too, transformational wealth beyond like these, the impact investing, I guess, as I would call it, and in different causes. I think transformational in just like making your region better beyond philanthropy, like in other ways too, beyond just philanthropy, and even transformational, like that you're taking care of your family and future generations. And so I guess that's the way I would couch it.
So kind of recognizing the wealth there, how does it transform relationships? You mentioned family. And how does it transform just it could be learning, right? It could be wisdom that you may get from different places as well. It goes, and this is something that I think we've come to see when we use that term transformational wealth. It goes beyond obviously the financial piece of it. Is what can that financial piece do to transform other areas? And you know, your area definitely is one where we can see a lot of benefit in the community. To help transform the lives of people that are around in the community as well, or other obviously other foundations.
I think investing. When I look at the most important thing in my life, and I'm sure you are the same, it is my children.
Yeah,
my children are everything, you know, and you want to give them the skill set. You hope that they have grit. You hope that they have all the things. A good handshake and good eye contact, you know, all the things,
That's right.
And you just hope that you set them up well for success. I think that's, like you said, I think that's beyond the money aspect.
I've always said I'm okay if they cut their teeth at home, but when they go out, I want them to have learned at home by cutting their teeth there. Like you said, how to look at someone in the eye, how to do a handshake.
Right. That's
and
right.
With this generation, even how to call to make an appointment, right?
I think that's going to be huge, especially as we could. That's a whole nother podcast, but as we grow into the AI space over the next decade. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, Aaron Sasker, President and CEO of the Northern Cincinnati Foundation, it was such a joy to have you join us today on the podcast. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you for listening to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Henn. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. Are you ready to leverage the power plays and attain financial freedom? Visit markhenn.com to tap into the power plays of the wealthy to start building your financial future today.